Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, we've been in a new chapter of exploration called Celestial Musings, where we hear the uncensored thoughts of our investigators. And how better to start than with legendary guest Tim Schwartz. Greetings, Tim. How are you?
Well, hi, Hercules. Thank you for having me on tonight. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great as well, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We didn't have a chance to have it on the other show because of time constraints, so I'm really looking forward to doing this.
Well, I am as well. And when we were on the other show, I didn't realize that I was actually going over my time. When I do these shows, I think that I don't have a lot to say, but then once I start talking, you know, you can't shut me up.
You always have a lot to say, and it's always of great value what you have to say. And you're starting to get into topics that are near and dear to my heart, but unfortunately a little bit beyond what the topic was for the UFO Entity Enigma. So I created this new show so that we could talk about such things.
Well, fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
We had started to talk about, like, who the UFO entity report to. And now we're going to look into, like, what are they really? I've been investigating the phenomenon my entire life, and I've interacted with the phenomenon in a variety of ways, some traditional and some not so traditional. And the only thing I've been able to conclude is that there is something there, and that it can communicate with you in a variety of ways, sometimes through other people, especially people who are attuned to UFO spirituality or cosmic spirituality, as it's called. So I've gotten messages from like one person, and then I've had the message repeat through other people who are mediums or UFO prophets or, you know, whatever title they go by. And it's the same message, sometimes delivered in the same words. And they have the ability to affect our reality by causing synchronicities and other strange events. And I don't feel that they're evil or tricksterish in any way. The mythology I grew up with kind of explains them a lot more than a lot of the UFO literature does. So you had started to talk about are we entertainment, and, you know, what is their relationship to us and so forth. So I really wanted to hear your thoughts.
Right. Well, on the previous show that you were referring to, I was talking about the idea that what we've been seeing here on Earth in association with the UFO phenomena, when it comes to contacts with the alleged extraterrestrials or, you know, whatever you would want to call them, may not actually be the main source, so to speak, that what we've been communicating with could very well be drones, constructs, androids, robots, however you'd want to call them. And I'm trying to think of messengers, so to speak, but not the real source behind the phenomena. And one of the things that I cited, and this is a new idea, as you're well aware of, Hercules, the old science fiction television show from Gary Anderson called UFO,
uh-huh,
where at first they had found a body from a crashed UFO and discovered that, first of all, it was humanoid. But when they actually did an autopsy on it, they found out that it was a human that had been repurposed, so to speak, by some other intelligence. And by the end of the series, they had pretty much determined that they had never seen the actual aliens that were involved. And, you know, that may not be far from the truth when it comes to our own UFO mystery, that all the things that people have been seeing aren't actually the true aliens. And that's the big mystery right there. You know, what is the real source? And, you know, that's what we're here tonight to talk about.
Oh, yes, certainly. And in antiquity, both in mythology and in, I believe it's the Chaldean oracles, in Greek mythology, you're told the tale of Zeus and Semele, who gave birth to Dionysus eventually. Zeus had promised Semele that he would grant her wish. And Hera, who was jealous of Zeus's girlfriends and their offspring, convinced Semele to ask to see Zeus as he truly was. So although Zeus tried to dissuade her from asking this, she asked it, and it destroyed her because Zeus was a being of light that was so incomprehensible that it destroyed whoever looked straight at him. So the gods in Greek mythology, they were shapeshifters. They could look like anything or anyone they wanted to look like. They didn't have the forms that survived in the statues. We couldn't understand them. And I believe, again, it was Chaldean oracles, although I may be wrong. It's been years since I read those books. But in one part, Hecate, who these days is the goddess of witchcraft and magic, earlier she was the goddess of crossroads and making choices, she exclaimed that the reason they look the way they look is because we expect them to look that way and act that way. So I too believe that we don't see the phenomenon in its truth. And in my own spiritual journey, I found that the universe will assume whatever guise you're comfortable with. So when I was exploring Jungian psychology, the universe became very Jungian. When I was exploring Hyperborean mysticism, you know, the northern Viking traditions and so forth, everything took on that type of mask. And it occurred to me after doing that a number of times that I am looking at it's something, and I am interacting with something that can adapt itself. And it seems at first that they're being deceptive, but then you begin to understand, and they've said this as well, is that they're appearing in ways that we would accept in order to better communicate with us. So I believe you're 100% right. We don't know what the phenomenon truly is or what it looks like or how it behaves. They're feeding back to us our expectations.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I think that is an important aspect to not only the UFO phenomena, but a lot of other types of paranormal phenomena, because there is, it's almost like a feedback loop, mm-hmm. that you get back what you put in, and this is something that we examined in the book Mimics, The Others Among Us, which you contributed to as well, that and you know, one of the questions that we asked in this book is that why not only do alleged extraterrestrial beings but other types of paranormal entities, you know, add your own category as you choose, why do they look human? All right? Because, okay, first of all, if you are dealing with biological creatures from other planets, the chances of them being humanoid is extremely rare, especially, you know, if you're dealing with something that evolved on a planet in a completely different solar system, you know, on another part of the galaxy, or what have you. You know, I mean, we know just from the diversity of life on this planet, all the different kinds of shapes and sizes that life can present itself. So why would these alleged extraterrestrials coming out of supposedly nuts and bolts flying saucers look so much like us? Now, going back to what you were saying earlier, if we're not dealing at least completely with species from other planets, but instead are dealing with something else entirely that is a lot closer to us than maybe we care to imagine, and it does have the ability to present itself in ways that are meaningful to us and in ways that are to intrigue us, make us think, help us along in our own spiritual evolutionary path, then yeah, they are going to present themselves as in ways that are, that we recognize.
Right.
And by that, not only in familiar physical forms, but familiar in the way that we think. Because once again, if you are dealing with a wholly extraterrestrial species, it probably is not going to be thinking the same way that we think. And that's a hard concept for a lot of people to wrap their heads around. It would be like comparing the way that we think with ants or bees or, heck, I mean, even some of the higher species on this planet. We can't expect them to think the same way as we do, and we couldn't expect an extraterrestrial race to think the same way that we do. However, if you're dealing with an intelligence that is a lot closer to us, either close to us on this planet or close to us on, say, a spiritual or vibrational level, then yes, you are going to find that the thought patterns, the way that they think, their consciousness is very similar to our own. And like you said, it may come across at times as devious, tricksterish, though I do think that there is a tricksterous element to a lot of this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you said, it's the way that we are interpreting these messages, these interactions, because naturally we're not seeing the full picture. The long game that is being played with the human species, with whatever this intelligence or intelligences, however you'd pronounce that, put an S on the end of it, you know, is the long game. And I mean, we only live so long, but as a species, we're eventually going to get it. But as individuals, it's going to be confounding. It's going to seem devious, evil, or good and angelic. We're just not experiencing the full picture yet.
I think you're right. Have you ever seen Babylon 5?
Oh, yes.
Remember the Vorlons? They're like in suits, and they lived in a very hostile environment, and they spoke very enigmatically. And then Sinclair was falling off a tram or something toward the ground, and Kosh, who was the name of the Vorlon, who was the ambassador, he left his metallic suit and revealed himself to be a being of light. And everybody there saw gods from their own belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And he rescued Sheridan, and I believe he perished. And then they sent another Kosh, Vorlon, whose disposition was more hostile and enigmatic, but he was still Kosh. So basically, there were beings of light that didn't make sense to us in their true form or as they existed, you know, their reasoning behind the decisions they made and so forth. But everyone saw in them what they expected to see in terms of a divine being or a being of light. And then by the end of the series, it was inferred that humanity eventually becomes a form of Vorlon and serves his function in the galaxy, having been through a mortal life. And Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, the movie with the original crew, where God was in the middle of the galaxy, and Kirk asks, why does God need a flying saucer? But he, too, he appeared in the guises of all sorts of different Star Trek civilization gods when he was communicating with them. So the mechanism, and again, I cited before ancient references to it, has been known since the dawn of time that we are interacting with something, and still on some level we are. It's even appearing in our pop culture. But there's something might be beyond our current capabilities to understand or to even interact with or even to keep our sanity when confronting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't want people out in the audience to think that I am just, you know, totally dismissing the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Because I think that, I mean, you know, we live in a very big universe,
right?
A lot larger than we can even imagine, and that no doubt that the physical universe is home to countless species and intelligent life out there, but some of them may actually be visiting us here. Yeah, I mean that's I think that is a good possibility, but the strange phenomena that people have encountered, you know, ever since we crawled out of the caves, seems to have that ability to mimic other phenomena, and like you know, we were saying earlier, then to work with our, for whatever reason, preconceived notions of everything. You know, when our biggest fears were whether or not we were going to be eaten by that saber-toothed tiger, then we would find ourselves haunted at night by ghostly vestiges of saber-toothed tigers appearing in places mm-hmm. where they shouldn't be. And I've seen similar types of phenomena of and I can't remember the name of it now, Hercules, but it was, I think it was like in Massachusetts in the very early 1600s when the settlers were being harassed, or they thought they were being harassed by Native Americans and who they thought were white men with guns that would appear in the night and shoot at the forts, hassle people, yell things, but in the daylight there didn't appear to be you know, any bullet holes or any injuries or things like that. It was like their fears were becoming manifest. And along with, because our fears tend to have the most, tend to be more energetic, all right? You know, especially when you're in a group type of settings, then that's the kind of manifestations that you see. Now, you turn that around to religiosity, and devotions, and you have large groups of people worshiping and praying, and then you'll see these types of holy manifestations. And I'm thinking right now, like in Christendom, of, say, visitations of the Virgin Mary, places like Fatima and Lourdes and things like that, where you have these amazing visions and miracles that on close examination, if you would go and peel away the religious belief and elements that's been kind of glommed onto it, then you start to see a phenomena that is very strikingly similar to a lot of UFO encounters and other types of paranormal events. So, you know, once again, we're seeing this other intelligence interacting with us in ways that are identifiable by us and taking advantage, so to speak, of our belief systems. And, it's like I said, I mean, is this a long-term process to guide us, to really to try to help us develop as a species to our potential? Because face it, I mean, we do. We have a huge universal potential out there, and it's really it's up to us on whether or not as a species that we live up to our to the expectations that have been given to us. I suppose that Hercules, the question is this other intelligence that seems to be helping us and guiding us along, separate from us, part of us, or is that just simply a silly question? That, you know, it's all of the above. So, you know.
I think it's part of us. There's a whole question of what people are calling bloodlines or genetic manipulation. In the myths, it's not genetic manipulation or anything scientific with devices, it's selective breeding. And in a lot of the backstories to the selective breeding is that people are being bred for specific purposes and as containers for divine consciousness to enter, just like we'd enter like an avatar in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've come to believe, and again, this might be erroneous, but it's the best belief I can cultivate based on what I've experienced and what I've explored, is that we're them here. And just like in a video game, the video game person lives in their world, and the part of them that's animating them and moving them along and making decisions on some level for them. And that's a prehistoric analogy, but our video games are evolving. During the course of my lifetime, I remember I was in high school when Pong came out, They certainly evolved, and they are now, you can hook people up to sensors where their mind controls their movement and so forth. So it's not too far off before we have totally immersive 3D VR. That might possibly happen in our lifetimes. But I believe it's something like that we're bigger than we think we are, or more than we think we are. And we know this because if we study consciousness like dreams or do things like astral projection or meditate, you become aware that there's much more to you than your consciousness is aware of, your conscious self. And I believe that there is some sort of program of creating certain strains of people that can act as interfaces between let's call it the divine or the unknown or the supernatural or the UFO entities, whatever term we want to use, that some people are bred through customs and traditions to create certain types of physical vehicles or certain type of consciousness that can then easily be manipulated by these divine or extraterrestrial intelligences.
Yeah, you. I think that you make a very good point there, Hercules, because we see periodically throughout human history people who arrive that are obviously a step ahead of the rest of us,
mm-hmm.
evolutionary, spiritually, or what have you. And, of course, depending on when and where they were born, they can find themselves being embraced or burnt at the stake,
mm-hmm.
sad to say. And I suppose that it's kind of like the way that certain animals lay their eggs. You know, they lay thousands of them at a time in the hopes that three or four will make it through. And I wonder if that's not also the process that we're talking about, where you have quite a few of these types of people arriving in certain parts of time, and only a few manage to make it for whatever reasons. And those that do make it contribute hugely to the rapid development of the human species. You know, one person I can think of naturally would be Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
You know,
I was thinking the same person.
Who was just, you know, such a great mind and not at all. Even though he worked with the system, he really wasn't interested in money or fame. He was only interested in money to be used to develop whatever invention he was working on next. He was never interested in it for his own personal gain, but only interested in helping his inventions along. And his inventions were meant to help mankind. That was always his big dream, to do things that would better his fellow man.
Right.
You see people like that all through history. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, I think, you know, was another person like that, you know, who you know, contributed so much to us. So. And, you know, you made some interesting points about almost being like an avatar. And because that shows, first of all, that what we perceive as our reality and our universe is a lot bigger and a lot more complex than we're capable of thinking. You know, right now we're taking huge strides in understanding the universe and how it works. I mean, you know, we've got the Webb telescope that's out there, who is taking photographs of the very edge of the universe. And when I say the edge of the universe, I mean like the beginning of the universe, because it is able to photograph the light that was emitted not too long after the Big Bang, if the Big Bang happened the way we're thinking that it happened. But we're just examining the physical part of the universe. And right now, physicists are acknowledging that that what we're seeing as the physical part of the universe is only like maybe, 5-10% of the actual universe,
uh-huh.
that the rest is made up of dark matter, what they call dark matter and dark energy, something that they have yet to really determine what it actually is. That's the big question about the makeup of the universe. You know, what is the rest of it. And the rest of it could very well be consciousness. And I'm saying that, you know, of course, I mean, there's no there's no way to back that up. And I know that yeah. most physicists would just roll their eyes, you know, with people saying something like that. But I think that our perceptions of the universe and how it's working is just so lacking right now. And that by examining just the small bits that are happening to us on this planet in the form of the high strangest phenomena that we've been talking about, you know, may give us a very good understanding on the true realities of the universe that we're not able to capture with telescopes or things like that.
No, I believe you're right, but I also believe that we're capable of evolving to the point where we can understand these things. I'm looking at the progress in thought during this past century that's passed, and how it's changed the way we view everything, and it's given us powers that beyond those that the gods possessed in antiquity.
Oh yeah, gosh! I mean, can you imagine how somebody in ancient Greek would think of, say, a working iPhone if they had one,
right?
And how they would interpret something like that? Would they realize that this was something mechanical, or would they see it instead as something from the gods, or maybe a little bit of both?
Well, the gods had robots and other things in Greek mythology,
right.
And they have found the Antikythera device, which had the sophistication of a Swiss watch during the realm of the Caesars. So there were animatronics in ancient Alexandria. I believe it was Heron of Alexandria was the guy's name. He called it the science to mathematics, where he made something move with like air. But they had all sorts of science fiction-y type things in antiquity. We've had flush toilets for like 5,000 years now, I think, something most people don't know. A lot of the ancient alien artifacts, although I'm not totally sold on the ancient astronaut theory, there are a lot of anomalous artifacts, some of which have been explained satisfactorily and some of which have not. But speaking about ancient Greece, there are bas reliefs showing a woman looking at something that looks like a portable computer, like one of those computers that closes and opens, and you can take it with you. I'm drawing a blank. It's a simple thing, and I can't remember what to call it. It looks like it has a USB.
Like a laptop?
Like a laptop. There you go. It looks like it has an ISP port on it, too, in the place where you'd find an ISP port. So that's the trickster's element I see, because it's not going to make sense until we discover something else. And then it's like, oh, yeah, they had laptops back in antiquity, too.
Well, you know, Hercules, even though that there really hasn't been any proof dug up yet, I don't think that we're the first technological civilization on this planet. This planet's been here for a long time. Yeah, and life has been on this planet for a long time as well. And you know, humans, for just a short, I mean, you know, we've been here barely a blink of Earth time on here. And you know, a technological-based civilization that arose millions of years ago could disappear completely, and there'd probably be nothing no kind of evidence left. Mm-hmm. You know, even plastics. You know, plastics would disappear. We know that the shape of land masses on the planet have changed so much that the majority of the planet, the surface has been completely eroded away and added back onto and over again. So any previous civilizations, the evidence would have disappeared completely. And it could very well be that you had a civilization that became spacefaring. Why should we be the first ones on this planet to have come up with the concept of being able to travel elsewhere? So, but again, I mean, you know, we're kind of going back to that physical idea that the real intelligence, the real source of information behind the UFO and other types of phenomena that we see in this planet is somehow physical. And I think that is a simplistic way of looking at it. And I referred to this on our other program when I talked about John Keel and the mysterious silent contactees that he had to deal with. And you know, you said something similar at the beginning of this program, Hercules, when because Keel noticed that a lot of times the same types of messages would come from these silent contactees, the majority of them not knowing each other. With Keel, Keel was the only person that would know all of them. And these contactees would contact Keel, say, like on the same weekend, with the same kind of messages that they were receiving from their flying saucer people. And, Keel at first thought, well, this was a confirmation that we were dealing with some kind of extraterrestrial race that had a definitive purpose on this planet. But as he became more involved in this type of phenomena, then the high strangeness started to come out, which then really confounded him. Because he couldn't understand why, if you were dealing again with some kind of physical extraterrestrial race, why they were playing these, what seemed to him to be very silly, almost juvenile, and science fiction-y, you know, like pop 1950s movies, science fiction-y elements. It really bothered him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I still have this happen. I have, like, sorcerer-type magicians who aren't speaking to extraterrestrials. They're speaking to intermediate spirits of all sorts and on all points in the spectrum. And people who, like those that have been on our shows, speak to distinct extraterrestrial type of presences, and other people that are communicating with the gods in their more modern day pagan forms. And yet I'll get messages from Zeus that are the same message to all of these mouths of people who don't interact with each other. Some of them I've gotten to interact with each other on our panels and on our shows. And now some of the things that I used to hold back are no longer valid because they've already told me these things separately before they knew each other. So now that they're talking, the information that they shared separately is no longer valid because they could tell each other that on the phone rather than it being something so strange that nobody could kind of guess that out of all the things that they can guess about me. But yeah, a lot of times you have to question what are they doing or what am I supposed to make of this? You'll get a weird series of synchronicities to reinforce the message that don't inspire confidence. Did I share my my manifesting money story with you?
No, I don't think so. Please do.
Okay, I play with different techniques and things. You know, I like exercising my mind. So I was reading a bunch of books about the manifestation, and what inspired it was when The Secret came out. And I recognized, of course, as the earlier forms of American free thought and all that arose from it and the I Am movement and so forth. So I decided to try it. So I wanted money to do something really big that I felt needed to be done in this world. So I asked for funding from the universe. And I said I needed millions of dollars, you know, to do this by my research and estimations. So within a day or two, I started getting millions of dollars, but it wasn't real money. It was play money. You know, the $1 million bills? And they didn't verbalize it to anybody that I'd done this, but all sorts of people in all sorts of circumstances were placing tons of fake $1 million bills in my hands and in my situation. And this continued for quite a while until it stopped. And, of course, I wasn't asking for play money. Maybe I should have specified. But it showed me that something was listening. Something had heard this. And that this something is able to interact with our reality or manipulate our reality. Because it's a very unlikely thing that I'd be getting so many fake $1 million bills crossed my path, you know, pretty much continuously for a couple of weeks. So... So again, it's something in the universe responded, and you couldn't deny that something heard this and something did this, but why would they give me play money, you know? Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Please finish your thought.
No, so again, it's like with the UFO or whatever beings that are communicating through the different people that they communicate with or communicating to sorcerers or to prophets and all sorts of people that I find myself interacting with and identifying as like the same source with the same words and the same message and reinforced by synchronicities. There too, something is listening and something is communicating through whatever means it can, including manipulating reality to produce synchronistic events. And this was kind of like the same thing. So I didn't do this. No one I know is capable of doing that to the best of my knowledge. So something invisible heard and it had a sense of humor or reasons for doing what it did, but it showed very clearly that I was heard and that something acted and produced a result that wasn't exactly the result that I was looking for, but it might have been the result that I asked for.
You know, that's really interesting. When I was doing my research along the same lines and I have to admit that I never read The Secret, just bits here or there. I instead read the all of the stuff that The Secret was based on that came out like in the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah, the new thought.
Right, exactly. And I remember that one of the things that was discussed is that when you put your intentions out there, it's almost like the monkey's paw. You know, you have to be crystal clear exactly what it is that you desire. And if not, then the universe takes the path of least resistance. And I think, you know, for you, that path of least resistance
was
the Monopoly money. Yeah, yeah, being sent to you. But, I mean, how fascinating is that, though, that when you put that intention out there, then all of a sudden you start seeing that play money coming into, you know, coming to you like that. Yeah, I mean that's it's so fascinating that web of synchronicity that we're all caught up in, and how when you pluck one strand of that web, how it then resonates back to you, and how you pluck it is what you get back. But if you had been more definitive about the types of money that you wanted to see coming in, you know, would you have seen it come in exactly as you envisioned it? Or, again, kind of like the monkey's paw and this the path of least resistance, you know, would it come back to you in a way that wouldn't be so desirable?
Mm.
And the thing that makes me think of that is, okay, you know, you put out that intention for lots of money, though you don't add to that how you want that money to come in, and then you have a loved one die and you get the insurance money. Yeah, something terrible.
That's a very good. That's a very good point. But the likelihood of finding paper million-dollar bills and getting them to me not all in the same way, but in different ways,
mm-hmm.
that took more than just tapping into the flow of money that's circulating all over the place at all times, and just funneling a little bit of that volume my way so that I could. Build what I was building. I think I was trying to put together like a community of artists at that particular point in time. I lived in Pennsylvania in the Poconos. It was a great place. I was teaching in college. I was also teaching metaphysics. And, you know, I wanted to kind of mix the education with the art and the theosophical type of speculations and do something with that. So I was not just focusing on the money. I was focusing on what I wanted to build. And the money mm-hmm. was just the way I was asking the universe. You know, the other way I asked the universe is to find me people who might share this dream or come up with a better one that we can work on. And that came pretty easily, and I was able to recognize the people and so forth. I wrote in one of your books about how I have like this movie that's been playing in my head since I was very young. And in the movie, I blow a horn and then just wait to see who shows up. So that's an exercise mm-hmm. I've been doing for a very long time. So I wasn't just focused on the money. And what impressed me wasn't that I got Monopoly money. It was for how long I got Monopoly money and who would have supplies of Monopoly money in my little corner of Pennsylvania to funnel it to me, you know, through different people who didn't know each other.
Hmm. Well, and I suppose then that's the $6 million question: is was there another message being sent to you in the form of that Monopoly money? The sources, you know, the people bringing it to you, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the only I contemplated that, and the only message I get from it is just don't worry about the money. I never do anyway. I just start doing what I want to do, and it eventually comes together or doesn't. But I never like really factored in money. But what I was thinking of was so much grander than what I normally plan to manifest in this short period of time. So I figured I would try something new and ask the universe for funding, you know, for a grant or a loan or whatever.
Well, and you can see then, you know, from this example, how people like, say, John Keel, would have thought that these messages that he was receiving would be tricksterish and, you know, trickstery's confounding with really a very nebulous type of reasoning behind it. Because, you know, I mean, you know, you knew Keel. You know how John was.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Even though he wrote about these kinds of phenomena, he wasn't what you would call a mystical thinker.
Right.
And so, you know, somebody like Keel would find this kind of phenomena to be devious almost.
Mm-hmm.
But not only devious, but, and I'm struggling for words here, Hercules, but with a almost like a mindlessness about it. Keel often wondered whether or not this phenomena that he was dealing with was almost like, you know, wind it up and set it off and it'll do what it's supposed to do and then that's it. You know, I think that for others who do try to have an all-encompassing view of the universe and the energies around us would see more to it than that. They would look, well, you know, they would look for the message in between the lines, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm looking at the clock. We have like 8 minutes, and I'm saying, oh, there wasn't enough time for this either. I have to make it more frequent or make it longer. So our conversations have expanded the shows already. Yeah, there's so much to look at, so much to think about, so much to explore. And I love the panels that we do, but a lot of times it just seems that, you know, we're getting like little like facets in the gem you're looking at, or the elephant story. One person touches the trunk, the other the tail, the other the leg, and they're each describing different things. And somehow, you know, everyone wondering how these all fit together. I'm glad we had the conversation to discuss these things further, and I'm hoping this will be the first of many times we can get together and discuss, you know, just these questions, and not feel that we need some sort of answer, because there might not be an answer, or at least there might not be an answer that we can understand, even if we could formulate the question.
Well, like you said earlier, I mean, I think that eventually we'll have a better understanding of these things, but, you know, the universe is, again, so huge that there will always be new questions that come up. And that's the wonderful thing, you know, because, and this is something, Hercules, you know this as well, that as soon as we think that we may have a handle on something, say like the answer to the UFO phenomena or other mysteries, then it seems like it has the ability to change and morph into something completely different that'll send us on a completely new path to try to understand.
And that'll be a grand adventure that we'll be here to experiment with and chronicle, and that's what makes it great.
Well, and I look forward to that, you know, because asking these questions, doing the research is so much fun to me that at times if you do manage to come up with an answer, then it's almost a disappointment, because it's like, oh, well, now the fun's over with. But then something new pops up and it starts again.
And it starts again. One of the things before we close that I must say is the phenomenon, whatever it happens to be, has not ever tried to convince me that I'm a prophet or a holy person, nor has it ever asked me to believe anything and not believe anything else, nor has it asked me to bow or to light candles or any type of ritual. It's in fact encouraged me to, you know, try to answer my questions, and occasionally it's given me some insight. So I have a difficult time sometimes with like understanding the whole like profit game. And not that it exists, but it's very foreign to me.
No, I agree with you on that, and I wonder at times if people who go down that path have misinterpreted the signal, so to speak, based, it's like, you know, like we said before, based on their own expectations. So, I mean, if you have say like a narcissistic, egotistic type of personality, then if, you know, whatever happens, that you are able to get this kind of communications, then you're going to think that it's wholly for you, you know, and that you are unique somehow. And again, we see people like this throughout history.
Yes, we
that,
do.
You know, crop up the false prophets. But I think that a lot of these so-called false prophets probably were receiving some kind of, you know, mystical information. It's just a matter of how they interpreted it. And then after that interpretation, what they did with it.
Very, very wise point upon which to rest today's conversation. Tim, thank you so very much. I greatly appreciate this. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I enjoy it a great deal. And again, like you said, it's the adventure that counts. It's the journey. So even just formulating the questions, I got a lot out of it.
Well, thank you, Hercules. I appreciate you having me on tonight. As always, I greatly enjoy these kinds of conversations because it gets me to think outside of my own box as well, and to listen to other ideas and other interpretations, because that's the most important part of these kind of conversations, that you're not just listening to yourself, but you're not just getting, you know, that echo effect, that new things, new ideas are coming into you. And that's really the important part of these kinds of conversations.
Yes, that is exactly what I believe as well. How can people enter your world, Tim? You produced a mountain of literature, and you have a magazine that is now, I think you can't link to it from some locations, I've heard, which is a great magazine. How can people enter your world?
Well, if you want to read my books, probably the best way would be go to Amazon.com and just type in my name, Tim R. Swartz. And all those books will come tumbling out for your reading pleasure, both as print and e-books. You can also find some of them at your favorite local bookstore or library. And I always encourage everyone to please patronize both, because, you know, it's especially, you know, your library is it's so important in this day and age when so many libraries are getting hit right and left. With people trying to censor them and you know, despicable things like that. So please patronize both of them. And my website, as you said, conspiracyjournal.com, and I suppose someday I need to change its name, because the word conspiracy seems to you know, cause some blockages on various sort social medias. I can understand that, the way that that word has taken on very negative political connotations. Conspiracyjournal.com is my website, and as we like to say, we've got all the weird news and information that they don't want you to know.
No, they don't. Thanks again, Tim. Have a wonderful evening, and I look forward to our next conversation. And if you know at some point what your next project is, please let me know. I'll start working on it now.
I definitely will, Hercules. Thank you very much for having me on tonight.
And thank you for being here. And thanks to our wonderful audience for tuning in. Celestial Musings will continue later this week, and we will have more hosts from the UFO entity Enigma. and more guests, and we'll be exploring the high strangeness aspects of the phenomenon. Good night, everybody. Until next time, joyous journeys, amazing adventures, a healthy and a happy new year.